This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You might have noticed there were a couple of big basketball games over the weekend, including this one.
Here's Clark. Had it knocked away, taken by Johnson. Johnson on the steal. Shovels to Kidd, who lays it in.
The undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks faced off against the Iowa Hawkeyes and their star player, Caitlin Clark, during the Women's March Madness Championship game on Sunday.
What was coming off the bench? Clark! Tessa Johnson comes out to meet Clark. Clark evades, bounces. O'Grady gets denied by Cardoso. Here's Johnson. Johnson, the pull-up. No. Rebound. Snare. Cardoso!
But Caitlin Clark's sharp shooting couldn't break past South Carolina's defense, especially from guard Raven Johnson and center Camilla Cardoso. South Carolina beat Iowa 87-75, rounding out their undefeated season with a championship title. Sunday's broadcast was huge. 18.7 million people tuned in to watch, with a peak audience during the game of 24 million. On Monday, ESPN said it was their most watched sporting event since 2019, other than football and the Olympics. A number of games leading up to the women's final kept breaking ESPN audience records. Tickets for games were selling on the secondary market for over $1,000, and many cases for significantly more than tickets for the men's games. ESPN covered every game as part of a new media deal with the NCAA, and they debuted a new halftime studio show. Through it all, wall-to-wall coverage of star players like Angel Reese, Paige Beckers, Juju Watkins, and Caitlin Clark. Today, we explore what's next for women's basketball after this record-breaking season. How can fans, the NCAA, and sports media support the women's game after years of unequal treatment in terms of money, airtime, and attention? I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, the automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy explains how Betterment's technology helps investors better understand and save on taxes.
So taxes are a real cost of investing, as are fees. Understanding your after-tax, after-fee returns is really what's important for investors. An example would be when you buy and sell securities frequently, you can pay a lot of taxes because short-term capital gains, meaning I bought it and I sold it fairly quickly, have higher taxes than long-term capital gains. Our technology in particular will tell you what the tax implication of a particular move you'd like to make is going to be before you make that move so that you're making it with full transparency.
Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed.
Joining us from New York City is Kavitha Davidson. She's a sports writer and co-author of the book, Loving Sports When They Don't Love You Back, Dilemmas of the Modern Fan. Kavitha, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from Syracuse, New York is Lindsay Darvin. She's an assistant professor of sport management at Syracuse University with a focus on gender equity. Lindsay, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So I want to get both of your reactions. What did you make of the final on Sunday, Kavitha?
I think it absolutely lived up to the hype. It's also everything that we've seen from especially South Carolina all season. You know, they've been dominant, undefeated, and taking over games in the second half. And really, as you mentioned, Raven Johnson's ability to come in and shut down Caitlin Clark after Caitlin Clark scored 18 points, another record that she broke in that fourth quarter. It was really quite a great thing. And obviously, you know, 18.7 million people got to watch it.
Lindsay, what about for you?
I echo those sentiments. I mean, being there, the atmosphere was electric. I was at also the LSU-Iowa game in Albany, New York, and I didn't think anything could top that atmosphere, but this game really did do that. And, it was just tremendous to see how far the excitement factor has come for women's sport and women's basketball specifically. So it was an excellent, excellent game.
Well, I want to dig into the ratings bonanza that happened during this tournament. Again, 18.7 million people tuned into Sunday's championship game. On Monday, ESPN said it was the most watched basketball game of any league since 2019. Some other numbers during the Final Four game on Friday between Iowa and UConn, 14.2 million people tuned in, with a peak of 17 million at one point. Until Sunday's final, it was the biggest audience for a women's basketball game on record, according to ESPN, and average ticket prices for that game reached $2,300. The March Madness on the women's side was unprecedented by almost any metric, Kavitha, but which metrics do you look to in order to quantify how much bigger this tournament was than in previous years?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely look at those ratings numbers. And if you compare those ratings numbers to other events that ESPN has broadcast in the last several years, it really is staggering. You know, they're outpacing World Series viewership and things like that. So, you know, whenever you have the conversation about women's sports and their economic and financial viability, they always get compared to the men's sports. And now the numbers are really proving there. I'll be interested to see. Some people think that the viewership from this final will outpace the viewership from the men's final. It really is also just based off of year-over-year growth that women's basketball, both on the collegiate and the pro level, have seen. And I think that those are the numbers that sponsors and broadcast stakeholders and the people who really have to put the investment into women's sports, those are the numbers that they're looking at.
Lindsay, why do you think the NCAA women's games have seen higher viewership and attendance this season?
It really goes back to also the media coverage, right? And so it's kind of a chicken or an egg conversation. But what I'm looking at metrics-wise also in addition to those points would be, how many storylines are we seeing? How much is the media building up these athletes? How well do we feel like we know these athletes personally? And that made a huge difference. And social media plays a role in that as well. But we, as fans, felt like we really got to know a lot of these star players, and that really got folks wanting to tune in. And I think that that made such a huge difference when it came to those viewership numbers and the amount of people that blocked time off on their calendar, even though these games weren't necessarily in prime time slots. So that made a huge difference. We knew these athletes a lot more than we have in the past, and the media did a great job promoting these individual storylines, which made it more exciting to view.
Now, Iowa's Caitlin Clark has been in so many headlines this season. She's been the subject of long profiles and all over ESPN's coverage of the regular season. She's projected to be the WNBA's first overall draft pick next week. But what about other players, Lindsay? Who else stood out for you in this tournament?
Definitely Paige Bueckers. And she's come along, you know, so much since some of those injuries that she's sustained. And she really was one of the star recruits coming out a couple of years ago. And so it's not surprising to see her shine on this stage.
And she's a junior and a guard for UConn. Go ahead.
That's right. She'll be back next season, which is also great for the game. But and Gino mentioned this. She needs to take on a little bit more, I would imagine. And she should have probably done a little bit more selfish play in the last game against Iowa, but she was phenomenal. And again, she's a very exciting player, and she gets along with the fans incredibly well. She has a lot of the same characteristics that a Caitlin Clark has. So she was extremely exciting to watch.
Kavitha, who stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Paige Bueckers, but, you know, if we're looking at South Carolina, Tessa Johnson really making some big threes, huge shots down the stretch. And, you know, this overall across women's basketball, this was the year of the freshmen. You know, we talk about Juju Watkins and USC, but, you know, it really is an incredibly exciting time when you look at the youth movement and how mature these girls are at such a young age. And this is a league and a sport that is very much built for the next few years to come with superstars.
And Tessa Johnson is a freshman guard for South Carolina. You know, when we talk about tournaments like these, they're often built on stories. Lindsay, it's something you alluded to early. Dominant programs, Cinderella teams. Kavitha, what were the stories or expectations going into this season in this tournament?
I don't think anybody expected the kinds of numbers that we're seeing now, but there was so much excitement after last year's tournament that everybody was just looking to see how the media and how the association could build on that. So that was number one. And two, you know, we're starting to see some fantastic rivalries. Iowa LSU was a matchup of last year, you know, some testy personalities, you know, between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. And, you know, going into this final, you know, this was, as South Carolina Carolina said, their revenge tour after being bounced by Iowa last year, and particularly Raven Johnson being able to shut down Caitlin Clark after she was waived off for three last year. So those are some of the storylines. But again, the freshmen just being able to carry some of their teams, and you know, not to overlook how, as Lindsay mentioned, these athletes are being marketed and that they're taking advantage of NIL deals and of their prowess on social media. And all of that kind of adds up to this perfect storm that we're seeing with this milestone year.
We'll talk about some of these deals a little later in the show, but I want to make sure we mention South Carolina head coach Dawn Staley. The Associated Press named her Coach of the Year. She received a number of other coaching awards. She's the only coach who's received both the Naismith Coach of the Year Award and the Player of the Year Award. And she's the only Black Division I basketball coach to lead a team to an undefeated season. And here she is after the final explaining her approach to building South Carolina's team.
We have quietly have done things, in my opinion, the right way. You know, we find the right pieces to help us. We really do things the right way. We're very disciplined in how we approach basketball. I am one that I'm forever indebted to basketball, so I'm always going to take care of it. I'm always going to make sure that our players are respectful. I'm always going to make sure that they know the history of our game. I want to make sure they are always respectful to our opponents. And when you do it that way, in return, you have success.
We'll talk more about Dawn Staley's season as a coach and this year's Women's March Madness tournament after the break. Coming up, what's happened in women's college basketball and college sports more recently that made this record-breaking season possible. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon.
Every time you drive your car, have a package delivered, or get on a plane, you're polluting the climate. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Nature is powerful. Why don't we use it to our advantage?
Meet the people working on cleaner ways to get around on Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR. Transportation Climate Solutions on Here and Now Anytime, wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Let's get back into the conversation with this message from one of you. Susan writes, as a longtime fan and former varsity basketball player, I was thrilled watching the women's tournament. It was fast-paced, and it was great to see not just the stars, but some of the other players have breakout games. Hannah Stuckey helped Iowa make it past a very tough UConn crew. Raven Johnson of South Carolina played phenomenal defense against Caitlin Clark. My goodness, can that woman shoot from way downtown? I remember Dawn Staley as a tenacious guard for UVA. To see her achieve greatness as a coach is just oh so good. We were talking about Coach Dawn Staley from South Carolina just before the break. Kavitha, what did you make of her season?
I mean, it's just what she does, right? She has built a dynasty in South Carolina. They've won two of the last three championships. They've only become the fifth program to win three. And as she said, she's done it by building and by building the right way. You know, it's really remarkable. They lost all of their starters from last year, and they really didn't miss a beat. And if you look at the way that they distribute the ball and that they share, you know, the scoring and the minutes, you know, they have one of the best and most deep and the deepest benches. Their second highest highest scorer, Malaysia Fulwiley, comes off the bench. But another thing that Dawn Staley talked about in that press conference after the championship was what they look for in recruits. And, you know, she mentioned respect for the game and respect for opponents, but she also mentioned respect for teammates and for the program. And she said that she looks for players who have good relationships with their parents, because if you respect your parents, you're going to respect us as coaches and the rest of your teammates. So I think that, you know, Dawn Staley is the definition of a player's coach. She has rightfully the admiration and respect of everybody in that room, and it very much translates to the court.
I also, though, want to point out a piece by columnist Sally Jenkins at the Washington Post. She had a piece out last week called "In Women's Basketball, the NCAA Regrets the Error All Too Often." Now, the NCAA governs college sports. Jenkins' column recounts some of the ways that the organization made mistakes in this tournament, so some of which could have affected the outcome of games. So, for example, one of the three-point lines in Oregon was 9 inches shorter than the other. Officials corrected the lines after 5 tournament games had already been played on that court. And the organization also pulled a referee out at halftime during an early round game, and that was after tournament officials found out she had a potential conflict of interest. She had a degree from one of the universities in the game. So, Lindsay, how are teams and players still facing inequities in this sport, despite the huge amount of attention this year's tournament has received?
Absolutely. And that's important to remember as well. And a brief history, too, right? The NCAA, back in the early 1980s and the late 70s, they did not want to host women's championships, right? They actually brought a lawsuit against Title IX's inclusion of sport in that policy. So it's important to remember the history here, too, of the NCAA and sort of the suppression of the market that the NCAA has engaged with when it comes to women's sports. And unfortunately, that was still the case during this tournament. And again, we saw those issues with the three-point line. We saw the issue with the official and what they had to do there to remove them from the game. But what we're still seeing also is this suppression of the market, right? We are seeing that, yes, they have valued the women's tournament a little bit higher, and they had their own TV deal, and ESPN and ABC networks did air all of the games across their network stations. But the women's tournament is obviously worth a lot more than what the NCAA is still giving it credit for. Even when we talk about some of the regional games, right, a lot of folks, and this is people are conflicted with this, right, but a lot of folks do go back and forth when it comes to neutral site games for all of the tournament games versus having them, having home court advantage for those first 2 rounds. A lot of folks would like it to be mimicked with what the men are doing, and they have those home court, or they don't have those home court advantages, and they're playing on neutral sites throughout the tournament, and right now that's not the case. That's obviously a little bit more expensive if they choose to do that. So we're still seeing some of these inequities. We're also seeing it in some of the broadcasts, unfortunately. So the way that these women are talked about by media professionals, and that definitely needs to change. Even using things like girls instead of women. I heard that a few times during this tournament, unfortunately. So it's the marketing of it. It's the role the NCAA has played in still not building the women's game up in the same way that they have the men's. And we want to continue to see them make those strides to gain greater equity.
Well, turning to some recent history in college sports, in 2021, the world saw a major shift in how college athletes could be compensated for their efforts as players. That year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that the NCAA's restrictions around the benefits that college athletes could receive violated antitrust laws. So later, the NCAA created a framework called Name, Image, Likeness, or NIL, and it allows players to make money through marketing deals with brands and small businesses. Kavitha, what have these deals done for college athletics on the women's side?
Yeah, I think that a lot of us were excited to see the potential for NIL deals to really boost the profile of a lot of women athletes. You know, obviously basketball is the highest profile of the women's college sports, but athletes down the line in non-revenue generating sports could also benefit from this. Women are better at using their social media to market themselves, and you're seeing this translate into some huge deals for people like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. Another part of that, though, is that the marketability in 2021 after NIL was struck came alongside a real reckoning that the NCAA had to do when it came to gender inequality. And obviously, as Lindsay mentioned, there are many ways that those inequities persist. But they had to commission a report, and it's called the Kaplan Report, basically about gender equity comparing the men's and women's tournaments. And that report found that the NCAA is significantly significantly undervaluing women's basketball as an asset. And some things have changed since then. Women are allowed to use the March Madness branding, which sounds ridiculous now that they weren't allowed to use that. But that in itself does so much to boost the profile of these players and of these games. And you know, we can talk about this later, but the way that the broadcast deal that was renewed in January now at least places a more accurate number on the value of the women's tournament matters. So, you know, the more visibility these athletes have, whether it's in sponsorship deals or whether it's in media coverage, the better it is for the sport. And it is a little bit ridiculous that it took this long for the NCAA to realize that.
I'm curious about, you know, you've got star players like Iowa's Caitlin Clark and LSU's Angel Reese, and they receive, you know, millions of dollars in these NIL deals, but not everyone lands deals that are that lucrative, Lindsay. What do even smaller deals do for players?
Well, it's tremendous. And I was very excited, you know, back in 2019, 2020, when some of these conversations around name, image, and likeness were coming up, because I really felt that this new initiative was going to help women athletes more than men in a lot of ways, because we have to remember that not only are they non-revenue sports a lot of times at the college level, but these women don't necessarily have opportunities to go pro once they're done playing in college. Certainly not in the same way that the men have those opportunities to go pro. So a lot of these other athletes, even Division III, Division II, those are the lower divisions of the NCAA, they have opportunities to run camps, run clinics, you know, make money from local community sponsors and things like that. And we are seeing that happen. They're running ads on their own social media platforms. Even if they don't have millions of followers, they only have a couple thousand, it's still making a difference for them. So being able to earn even a little bit of money while you're playing your sport, when you know that you're likely not going to have those professional opportunities, that's huge. And that's also, like Kavitha's saying, it's building the brand of women's sport across different sports, not just women's basketball. And it's making these athletes more recognizable, because forever, men athletes have benefited just from free advertising historically. The women athletes haven't had that, so they've had to build up their own brands through social media. So now that community partners are getting involved, even if it's on a very small scale, that's also building the brand and building up these athletes as well.
For people who tuned in for the first time this year, and it appears there are millions of fans who fall into that category, Lindsay, what context would you share about the players in this tournament and the spotlight the media puts on them?
Well, in some regards, right, it's actually a lot of pressure. So that is something that is becoming more and more noticeable, right? I think that a lot of these women athletes do feel that pressure of building up the sport during this very particular time in history when social media is so huge and people are going to have very instant responses and reactions to the things that they're saying in the media. But on the flip side of that, they're benefiting from it, right? Tremendously. So being in the media more frequently, using social media to their advantage, as Kavitha said, women athletes are so much better at using social media and building up their brands. And women's fans, actually, research does tell us that women fans use social media more to engage with sport content than men do. So using all of those platforms has really, really assisted. But it is important to remember that these women athletes are placed under a tremendous amount of pressure, and They're young people still, right? Most of them are under the age of 22. So it's what I have noticed is it's tremendous to see how well they're handling the spotlight. And as they handle it well, the media is going to approach them more and more. And that's what we're seeing. So it's been a ripple effect. Essentially, the women are doing a great job promoting themselves, and the media is noticing that, and they are turning to them more to build up these storylines.
Well, we should know that as of 2022, Black women and other women of color made up just under 67% of Division I women's basketball teams. Lindsay, how have those players had to navigate this sport differently from white players?
Absolutely. And that's something that's incredibly important to talk about here. The sport of women's basketball, a lot of it has been built on the backs of Black women, and they don't necessarily receive the same coverage and the same publicity that white women are receiving. And one thing that I want to point out, Caitlin Clark has done a tremendous job, right? And she is a tremendous athlete. She's super exciting to watch. But to consumers, especially new consumers in sport media, she's a little bit more comfortable than some of these other women tend to be. And that's important to remember as well. And the media does build that up, because if they think that she's comfortable to the masses and that there won't be any controversies there associated with her building her own brand or for them building her up, they will promote her more and more frequently. Black women, unfortunately, face additional stereotypes, additional racial stereotypes. They are not given the same sort of leeway when it comes to being outspoken on the court, outspoken to the media. And we've seen athletes like Angel Reese really, really take the brunt of this over the years. And so it's not just from the media, but it's social media as well. And that's something that I would really like to see schools and universities even do a better job of protecting their athletes, especially their Black women athletes, from some of the attacks that they're receiving, not only in the media, but on social media as well. So Black women have done so much for the sport of women's basketball, and yet they still don't receive the same amount of coverage as white women.
Well, LSU's Angel Reese spoke to the press after the team's loss to Iowa in the Elite Eight, and she referenced blowback and online abuse she's received since LSU won last year's March Madness tournament.
I don't really get to stand up for myself. I mean, I have great teammates. I have a great support system. I got my hometown. I got my family that stands up for me. I don't really get to speak out on things just because I just try to ignore, and I just try to stand strong. Like, I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time.
Raven Johnson of the winning South Carolina team also openly talked about almost quitting basketball last year in the face of online abuse. Kavitha, what would you like to see to better support the mental health of women athletes in this game, especially when it's receiving more attention and airtime?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely something that we need to be concerned about. And obviously, as you mentioned, players have come out to talk about the kind of online harassment and abuse that they've faced. But we are also seeing this in traditional media. There have been, I kind of joke that true equality is having the same terrible hot takes from commentators about women's sports as we have from men's sports. But we've seen, you know, we saw this column in the LA Times come out during the tournament comparing UCLA and LSU, and it was very sexualized and very racialized. It called the UCLA team, which is largely white, milk and cookies, while it called the LSU team dirty debutantes. And there was a lot of language in there that was extremely problematic. I think that the NCAA understands that it has an issue here. I know that I've talked to Brian Hainline in the last few years, who's the chief medical officer, who was mostly concerned about mental health, especially when it came to the women athletes there. But there are other pitfalls that this can potentially open up. You know, we're seeing overall more abuse, not just of women athletes, but of athletes in general, as betting continues to grow.
Let's pause here for a quick break. Still to come, we talk about sports betting and how this season's excitement contributes to future seasons of women's basketball at the college and pro level. We'll be right back.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Instead of scrolling mindlessly, engage mindfully with the NPR app. With a mix of on-demand news, stories from this station, and your favorite podcast, you can relax without shutting off your brain. Download the NPR app today.
Let's jump back into our conversation about the Women's March Madness tournament and the growth of women's basketball. Kavitha, before the break, you were just starting to explain the effects of sports betting on women's basketball. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I actually wrote about this on Sunday. You can find my column at MSNBC. But, you know, we have seen an incredible growth, not just this year, but in the last several years, when it comes to betting on women's sports. You know, betting on women's soccer has grown 20% every year since 2020. Betting on the women's tournament this year is 28% higher than it was last year. And everyone that I've talked to will be quick to note that they don't believe in this case the betting is driving the viewership, but it is the other way around. You have far more people who are watching these games, and you have far more people who have access to betting with legalization. And accordingly, you have more people placing wagers. Now, multiple studies have shown that increased betting can also drive increased engagement, particularly among casual fans. And I think what a lot of people are looking for in the way that sports betting can benefit women's sports is diversity of programming. You have betting shows that are going to be covering these sports and these individual athletes as people are placing prop bets on it. And as Lindsay mentioned, when you have more stories about individual athletes and you care about them in that level, and sometimes if you have a financial stake in that, that really does drive lasting fandom. But But I am also quick to point out that all of the pitfalls that we're seeing with betting in men's sports, women's sports are not immune to those. And women's sports really does have an opportunity now to get ahead of those issues before and to learn from the mistakes that have been made in the men's leagues before it gets to that level.
What are some of those pitfalls?
Well, obviously, we've seen in the last few weeks a couple of potential corruption scandals, match fixing. Shohei Ohtani, who's a pitcher for the Dodgers, had to fire his interpreter because of some betting debts that he had and financial transactions that came along with that. There's a player on the Toronto Raptors who was betting on his team, or there's an investigation into whether he was betting on his team. And then outside of that, you know, the integrity of the game is something that we absolutely is always a concern when it comes to betting. But in particular, NCAA President Charlie Baker is concerned about the potential for increased abuse. Prop bets or parlay bets, so individual bets on players, let's say, grabbing a certain number of rebounds per game. You know, when fans lose out on those things because a player, sits out for the last couple of minutes of a game or what have you, or misses a three, we are seeing increased verbal abuse from the sidelines and a lot of increased online abuse as well. Gabby Marshall, there was a controversial call that people really felt could have impacted the end of UConn, Iowa. And she said that she had to delete her social media because of abuse that she was getting. And it's not a stretch to think that some of that was from people who would bet on UConn. So, these are some of the issues that we're just going to continue to see. Even in smaller sports, we have seen match fixing globally in women's sports. So there's a lot of evidence and a lot of history that we can learn from. And I think the hope is that we can do that while still allowing the women to benefit from the monetary aspects of betting.
The WNBA draft is on April 15th. Hey, Kavitha, how do you think the WNBA should take advantage of this moment?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's about the marketing and star power. And we're already seeing, you know, the Indiana Fever is projected to draft Caitlin Clark first in the draft. We've already seeing a spike in ticket sales. The Las Vegas Aces have said that they are moving to a bigger arena, partly to accommodate more fans for when this next generation of WNBA rookies come to town. And that's really incredible to see. I will say that while I commend ESPN for all the strides that they've taken in the coverage, I think that there were a couple of missed opportunities, very small things, but still, you know, significant things nonetheless, to parlay the excitement of this tournament into the draft next week. And one of those, and Lindsay, please correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see a single ad for the draft or a single notification about the draft during some of these games. And that seems like, you know, low-hanging fruit. But I do think that we'll see this translate into increased interest in the WNBA. Now, I also think that these women are going to be playing at a level of competition that they haven't seen yet. These are the pros. And just the same way that we see sometimes a star in men's college basketball doesn't always translate to the pros, that's something that some of these women should be prepared for. But, you know, the higher the competition, the higher the level of play, and the more fan interest is garnered. So it can only be a good thing.
Now, the NCAA did sign a deal with ESPN this year. It's worth $920 million. That's over 8 years. It covers 40 sports and their championships, including 21 on the women's side and 19 on the men's. But Kavitha, what should ESPN and other media outlets do to ensure the quantity and quality of their women's sports coverage is equitable and fair?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting deal. There have been calls for many years to stop bundling the women's tournament with other championships that the NCAA has, and that did not happen, obviously. They are still bundled in here. For comparison, the men's tournament negotiates their own rights deal completely separately from other championships. What did happen here, though, was that the women's tournament was for the first time individually valued at $65 million a year. That's more than half the value of this deal, which works out to 115 a year, which is and it's more than 10 times what it was previously valued at, which goes back to what people have been saying, that they have been completely undervalued as an asset in previous years. So that is a significant step forward. And there was some reporting this week that could also lead to revenue sharing from the tournament back to the conferences, which will only boost the profile and the resources that these programs have. But another thing that really needs to happen. And I think, you know, we're starting to see some of that movement is, you know, better scheduling for some of these games. As Lindsay mentioned, we didn't have all of these games on primetime, and we certainly didn't have the championship game on ABC. And I think a lot of people, you know, we had a 3 p.m. Eastern start for the championship game on Sunday. A lot of people would like to see that move to 6. The men's game started at 9:20 Eastern, which is absolutely prime time. So, you know, while we are making strides, there are absolutely ways that we can still build on this. But I really do think that that rights deal, you know, it really is a cyclical thing here. ESPN is going to put more resources into maximizing their viewership now that they are paying more money for these tournaments, and that these tournaments are valued much more highly than they were in the past.
So March Madness is over, but if new fans of the sport want to look to the next big event in women's basketball, where should they be looking, or what players should they be watching?
Well, if we go back to the WNBA conversation, that would be the first go-to in my mind. It's an easy transition from this NCAA tournament, and even if you didn't watch the full thing, you've heard about it, right? And you've heard about these athletes in the media. So come on over to the WNBA. That would be the next step in this process, especially with all of the really talented rookies that are coming in and the really talented vets that have been there forever. What people have to remember about the WNBA is it's the hardest North American sport league to make a roster spot on, which means you have such tremendous, amazing athletes throughout the WNBA. There is no letdown anywhere in the league, and it makes it so exciting to watch. And now that we're coming off of a great NCAA tournament with a lot of eyes and a lot of publicity, I would say come on over to the WNBA. It's happening in a couple of weeks, and you don't have a long time to wait.
Well, we'll definitely be watching next season to see what these young players are going to do. Thanks to our guests today. Lindsay Darvin is an assistant professor of sport management at Syracuse University. And Kavitha Davidson, she's a sports writer and co-author of the book, Loving Sports When They Don't Love You Back, Dilemmas of the Modern Fan. Thanks to you both. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Elastic. Over 50% of Fortune 500 companies use Elastic to help them make insightful and impactful decisions at speed with Search AI, taking your data into the future. Learn how at searchpowered.elastic.co.
If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.